Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
The conscious mind can process 7 plus or minus 2 pieces of information at any time. Think about that. Keep thinking about that. And just keep thinking on that away into the night. Because I'm talking to you, your unconscious mind. Thanks for tuning in. Same time, same channel. It's that late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. Welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey everybody, hello and welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, Conversations That Bend. I am your host, your curator of experience, your cultural hypnotist, your consciousness disruptor. Yes, put all those things together, you get a looper. Because, well, I'll tell you what an open loop is in a second. And why we named the show that. You see, my goal on this show is to share radically unique ideas, me and guests, that they're designed to challenge your existing belief systems. And when you have this overload of new thought in your head, ultimately you mix that all up together, conscious, unconscious, preconscious, superconscious, to get to a point where you can't do anything except expand and become the highest version of yourself. We do that with a mix of categories, different subjects, topics that, well, they take us away from it all. You see, because an open loop is just that. It's an unconscious provocation. It's the thing that makes your brain just want to know more about the information. Some call it rabbit holes. Some call it dot, dot, dots. Some call it cliffhangers. We investigate all those topics that provoke something in our unconscious and just make us want to know more. We're talking about the topics like hypnosis, magic, spirituality, psychology, anything that makes you want to escape, glamour, beauty, very broad topics that are broad enough that make you just go, huh? Well, clearly it's something, and if I can intellectualize about it, there could be a great conversation here. Some might call it overanalyzing. Some might not want to listen to the show. That's fine too. This is a place for dreamers, idealists, conscious escapists. Yes, we are all here. Doesn't matter if it's taboo. Doesn't matter if it's controversial. Doesn't matter if it's spiritual. Doesn't matter if it's conspiratorial. It has a place here because on Open Loops, my goal and the goal of my guests is to discover who and what we really are. Ed Hubbard, known in the communities as Ed the Pagan. He's been a broadcaster for many, many years. He also is the founder of Witch School. He is very much a public-facing witch, psychic researcher, psychic in general. He's a futurist. He's a techno-magician. There are just so many words to describe this guy. This episode, he goes into a deep dive into what witchcraft is today, what the connections between technology and magic, with a K, are today, and the title of this episode, which we do actually look, I'm not just fully teasing you all, if you're listening to this, we get into why a certain popular female politician these days, based on all the principles that Ed brings up from the beginning to the end of the episode, is indeed most likely a practicing witch. That's right. The ritual traditions of witchcraft have a lot more feminist roots than people even realize. And if you look at who AOC is, and what she's been able to achieve, how can you not think there's magic involved? Techno magic involved. There's something about her. Also, Ed is just such a fun guy. I really enjoyed interviewing him. We went all over the world with this conversation, and into galaxies and in black holes of wonderment. It was a really fun conversation. I enjoyed it. If you enjoy Open Loops, please make sure to share this podcast with your friends, family, fellow occult practitioners, whoever it is out there. And if you could follow the show on Apple Podcasts and rate it and leave a few words, a review or two. You don't have to leave two reviews. Leave a few words in the review. It would help a lot. Greatly appreciate. Helps get these conversations out there. And now without further ado, I welcome Ed the Pagan for an episode that really is going to reshift the way you thought magic worked. This is a lot better than witch talk. Yes, there's a TikTok movement dedicated to witches. If you want to know what's really going on, Ed's been in it for a long time. Get ready for an education. Enjoy. Today on Open Loops, we have Ed the Pagan, the man behind the newly mounted pagan.school?
Pagan.world.
Pagan.world. But you are a teacher of sorts, aren't you, too?
I am. I'm first elder of my tradition, emeritus. So we just took over. And I founded Witch School.
Witch school, that's right. Pagan.world and witch school. Mm-hmm. Ed, I mean, my gosh, you've had a career in broadcasting. You're doing this this stuff about a directory to bring other witches, warlocks, mm-hmm. practitioners of the occult together. Were you a Catholic growing up? Do you grow up into this? Like, how does being a pagan practitioner happen for you?
So I have some Catholic baptized and baptized within a week of each other. My grandparents raised me Catholic. I went there, but my main church was a Southern Baptist church called Fairfield Baptist. And it relates directly. Yeah, I was a very strong church member, Moody Bible Institute, all of that. Yeah. But one of the things my pastor did a sermon every Halloween called, the witches were taking over the world. And he did it every year. It was always my favorite sermon every year. And he would talk about how Ouija boards were games that were going to take over people's minds and how the movies were twisting everybody and how witches were such these powerful characters that you couldn't look at them. You didn't want to deal with them. They were so powerful. And about 15 years old, I went out looking for witches. I was going to be God's spy. And I found them. And then when I found out what they stood for, it took me about 10 years, but I became really part of that community. And then eventually I gave it all. I became a priest when I was 28 years old, and the rest is history. But
yeah.
that pastor making this idea of this wish actually drove me right towards them. And then what I found out what they meant was everything.
That's very interesting. Yeah. I mean, that is a very, you know, I mean, I definitely as a kid was much more drawn to, I don't know. I mean, I was drawn to magicians, like conjuring, like that's my background. I studied magic and I was, it's still a hobby of mine, you know, like if you give me a deck of cards, I'll still do great tricks. But I think that there is something very appealing about the idea of having powers that are beyond human, that beyond that the waking day reality, and being able to cast spells and control people. And I mean, that's the appeal of hypnosis too. Here's what I'm wondering though, like, do you find it a dangerous pathway for people to go down? Like, I feel like the allure is there. And I know that's not ultimately, you know, if you talk to someone about being in a Wicca, they're often not going to be like, well, it's not really that, you know, Wicked Witch of the West stuff. It's a tradition and it's about nature and stuff like that. But like, man, I know what these occult practitioners are really kind of drawn to about it. Like, there is some magic with a K that gets a little out there. For you, how would you explain it to people that are like attracted to the allure? How magical does it actually get?
So the question's got to be how fast and how quick and how slow you're willing to manifest. And are you going to ignore it when it happens to you? I hate this. This is the thing I hate the most. Somebody comes up to me and says, I love this girl. I want to do it. First of all, do not use the love spell. Don't, as they say in the goat, do not start a marriage with a kidnapping. But if you do, you know,
right.
If you do an lure spell, you know, you probably use a lure spell, which is a little safer. And you lure her and you get her and you get the confidence. You ask her out. You bring her to this moment. She gets there and everything turns out. The music is just perfect. And she goes to you and says, so what do you want to do next? And you turn to her and says, oh, Green Bay's on television. Instead of saying the words that you really mean, you get so self-conscious, you get so timid. When we get to the point where like, oh, my magic is about to happen, the thing I want to happen, we're so afraid of being rejected or turned down or anything. And so the power of will is so essential to all of this. That's it. You do have to start with your own power of will. You have to accept you are okay to have whatever happens, including no's, but yeses too.
So wait a minute. It is spells.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm a spellcaster. I'm absolutely describe myself as a spellcaster. I'm a practicing magician of sorts. I'm not of that. Not so stage magic so much, though. I have a love of it.
Yeah.
But I definitely am a spellcaster. I cast spells. I help people cast spells. I did one over Halloween for the full moon. We did a oracle. We did a great morning ritual. And wherever we took in people's grief, ate it like an old-fashioned thing, and then wailed it back out.
Wow! I mean, this is making me wonder about how people define spells. Just in terms of, you know, I mean, I definitely believe in the idea of energy and at least like showing up in a way that. Like, okay, here's my question. Could you show up as like a timid, unconfident kind of guy? But like, if you're using the allure spell, like even showing up, I guess the real question is, could Woody Allen cast a spell and make the most beautiful woman in the room be attracted to him, even though he's not showing up in a way that's like going to trigger her like primal attraction mechanism, whatever that ends up meaning? You know what I mean? Like, oh, they're attracted to confidence guys.
Well, hasn't he?
Guys.
Hasn't he? I mean, for as far as he's concerned, hasn't he attracted the most beautiful women that he sees? He doesn't seem to have any confidence problems. It is about that. I mean, I've seen people do that. Yes, I've seen it happen. People always go, oh, you shouldn't make those things. But I've seen it happen. It's a matter of what you accept as the result of magic or just the result of positive thinking. The secret is really refurbished Wicca in a lot of ways. It's refurbished witchcraft is a lot of what we say in there. if you can imagine it happening and you can got the will to take it, no matter how scared you get, and go with the courage, you can get it changed. Absolutely. And I see that all the time. And I do believe the universe responds to you. I think there's forces in the universe that respond to you. And spells are really a ways to structure your will in the same way practicing music makes the sound of itself become better for you. The better you become at music, the more people you can use it for, the more energy you can put into it. Same goes with your practicing of your will for magic. And for some people, it's incantations, some for candle spells, some are prayers. Everybody has a different style.
Yeah. I really want to understand this. I really want to understand that, because I feel like it gets into, even when people are saying like, I've read some stuff about Alan Moore talking about language, and for those that don't know, like, people, Alan Moore wrote Watchmen and is a magician in this sense. He's an occult magician. And when he's talking about the power of language, I'm sitting here going, I don't know if occult practitioners are actually just really skilled at semantics. Like, is it just calling, and this is, you know, it speaks to the episode of the guy that I had on the other day, Jonathan Royal, right? He's talking about placebo effect and the power of just calling things whatever you want. Like, could the ritual of magic simply be the fact that you're saying, like, I'm going to show up as the type of guy that attracts money and attracts women and attracts whatever I want into my life, simply be like, I'm using psychology to believe that I am this person, therefore it comes into my life, and then occult practitioners are then being like, no, that's magic. Like, is it that simple? Or I'm always looking for that something supernatural. Like, what is the secret space between psychology and magic?
So words are regenerative. Okay.
Okay.
So words are regenerative. I mean, you just don't talk them. You bring them into being. Your ideas go there. It means we have to have this awe and wonder. I can give you a very simple one. So a lot of magicians use neurolinguistic programming. It's a very normal thing. But we, you know, Phil Farber, brain magic, and he does use a lot of it. But I can give you one piece for me. So in July 2019, I went to the Starwood Festival, took sacrament. For those who know what that is, I went to the woods. I was really upset. I just lost my business. I just bankrupted, and I got out to a festival where I had friends, but I went out to the woods crying, and a spirit came to me, a fae, a male and a female. And he asked me why I was so upset. And then he wanted me to give a message. The world was going to stop. And I said, no, I don't believe in unverifiable personal gnosis. I won't do it. Took my eyes out of my head, washed them, put them back in my head. Thought I had a weird effect. Okay. Went into my tent, came out of my tent, and I saw the trees, and the trees looked green to me. And like, wow, that's what green looks like. And then I realized I was seeing green for the first time. I've been dealt with colorblind most of my life. I got tossed out of the military missile program because of this. I have recordings for more than 40 years of my colorblindness. And then all of a sudden I was able to go to the doctor and have my full color vision. I really believe that I had a spiritual healing through Faye. And I have something I can record to you. I can show you before that night I was colorblind. After that, I wasn't.
That is fascinating. And also, wait a minute. Who was doing this to you? Like, this was like the spirit came to you and did this.
A Faye, a particular one. He was a Faye general. He was a strong Faye figure of the land, the Starwood Fairy, and they are festival fairies. You know, you think of fairies, but they are not safe and little mild creatures. They're very powerful entities. And I'd gone there a number of times, and he brought this healing, and he wanted me to bring out the idea of them being there. And since then, I've gotten people, more than 50 people have built houses in honor of him and his crew and the tribe that he brings over into houses. So people have at least made an art object out of that vision.
Wow. This gets interesting. This is kind of intriguing. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about this fae. Is this spirit something that shows up to you in a, first of all, what is sacrament? Let's start there.
Let's go ahead. Sacrament's LSD.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So fae, when it shows up to you in this vision, like, mm-hmm. what exactly for enough people to be able to see it. I think that is the cool thing about hallucinations, like collective hallucinations, everybody seeing the same thing.
Right. And for me, it was a very tall, it was the green man, it was a very tall, antlered man with an animalistic face and the sort of traditional legs of Pan. Yeah. Very much a Pan figure. It was very much a Pan or a sylph of that nature. Not the sylph, a Pan, yeah. And behind him, the female was looked like, the only way to describe it is like a tree's, you know, kind of a feminine tree, but the branches, the base of it, her skirt was like a series of branches, like a whole skirt made of hundreds and hundreds of branches.
Yeah.
And the strong sense of musk there. I remember very much in the musk. And I remember, okay, because I have my skeptic moments because I'm known for that. I mean, I don't judge it. You know, I'm not a light and, there's no way anyone would call me the light and airy part of the pagan community. I'm right. Very practical. And so it was very musk. And so I thought of it. I shook my head out of it, but I couldn't drive it out of my head. So it was very much present. I could smell it. I could sense it was right there. I could see what it looked like, but I knew I was seeing it in my mind's eye. Hmm? And this is when you take pictures of it. It's an energy. It's almost like an energy where energy of one realm crosses into another. It's very much where the observer theory comes in and superimposition comes in.
Right.
And it created something that could have been there from any number of times, but it suddenly made me observe it. It forced me to observe it is the best way to phrase it. Mm-hmm.
So tell me this then, Ed. Is it possible to experience like full-blown visions of these fairies when you're not taking sacrament?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And people have talked about it. Yes, absolutely. For me, it was a lowering of the veils. Now, mind you, I have not, previous to this, I've had two visions since then without it. And too long to get into, but it caused a true, I had to burn down a fairy grove to the ground. That's another story, though. Since this. Yeah, I did. I had to burn it completely to the ground. Boring beetles. Big story. Don't ever use wooden fences with wires around a fairy village. Bad news. I'm just learning this fairy stuff. So to say that I'm a lifelong fairy person, I'm not. I'm starting to deal with those conjurings. I'm starting to deal with that. And any time a witch could be called on to deal with new aspects of the world. Hmm?
What is this life? I mean, this is like such a different view. I mean, like this community of people, it feels like you must have a different daily routine than most people. Like when you go to the doctor's office, like, are you encountering spirits that other people can't tell you that can't tell are there? Like what is like your daily?
There are. So I don't have that personally. I'm more of a coach to people like this. Sarah Wilde, Donna Lewis. Oh, I'm much more of a counselor to people. And they deal with it. And some people can deal with it and they learn exercises and they spend time like any good art of shutting it down.
Yeah.
They tend to be hermitage. One malady that's happening, one increase in our society is empathy. I don't know if you've heard of this, but there is a huge waves of people saying, I'm empathic. There's books now about business empathy. Empathy is the first real crack in the eyes for it. I mean, we had yoga. We've had other things. I always tell people, you want to know how fast an occult practice become a medically accepted and paid for condition? 35 years. It's how long it took acupuncture to go from the back of Oriental shops where people would have thought it was terrible to being a medically accepted, proven fact. 35 years. People always look at me like, really? Yeah, acupuncture, if you remember, was terrible. In your 70s and 80s, it was almost a crime. You could get arrested for you doing it.
Right.
And today, it's everywhere. We tend to absorb magical or thinking when it serves us. And we then turn it into science. That's the essential thing. Magic is the other part of the spectrum. Magical subjective, meaning only I know about it and only I can prove it to myself. And as I bring these ideas into the world, it can become scientific objective. We knew that the inside of willow bark helped headaches. Eventually, everybody has aspirin because of that sort of founding by this healing witch, this sort of craftswoman, this herbalist.
What brought up the veil? what brought up the veil in the first place? Like, if there's this is the question I always ask people that are talking about, like, well, there were these ancient practices, or people that believe in, I had a guy on the other day talking about aliens and how they were here before. They were just early versions of us, almost like the lost city of Atlantis kind of idea. Mm-hmm. Why did magic go away?
Separation of the bicameral brain was one of the first things. We started seeing it in European and Egyptian cultures, where the hemispheres began to separate. And that happened a while ago. As we got more and more civilization, our brains started to separate more. And that allowed us the idea of a right brain and a left brain. We know people who have less separations in the bicameral brain are much more adept. The aboriginals are much more closer to that. The aborigine of Australia, they have a very different, distinct brain. So we had that.
Yeah.
And the second thing we did, we had an active, powerful force in monotheistic religions. Judaism ran it out of their religion. Christianity did everything they can to run it out of their religion because they didn't want competitive things. And so did Zoroastrianism. If you're not a Zoroastrian magician, where a lot of the starters from, you did it. And out of the Muslim world, they drove magic out. They made it criminal. They made it everything else. They made it trying to make it unimaginable. If you can forget, remember, words are regenerative. So if I can make you stop using a word, that word disappears. And they made us disappear hundreds of words for magicians. We used the word witch and magician, but there was hundreds of words in different languages that represented a whole series of specialists in industry of sorts. They had it in Rome and that would do this, but that was eliminated on purpose. And they tried to restrict our language from that. And we've been in that sort of process of a language restricting, thought restricting pattern in order to make us less susceptible to these forces. I really do believe that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That is very interesting.
And science, because of its ability to create observational results, has made its mother, magic, alchemy, chemistry, astrology, astronomy. I mean, so it basically makes science slay its mother in order to be credible. Hmm?
Yeah. What do you think about, like, there's a tradition here. There definitely is a tradition. There's enough books. I saw my friend was showing me this guy in New York City who was a member of the Hermetic Order, and he put up hundreds of his, I think he passed away, hundreds of these old occult books in the, you know, I don't even know how old, like 1700s, 1800s, like things that were written. He was auctioning them up on eBay. To me, Ed, I look at that tradition and I say, if this stuff has been talked about this long, then there's something here. There's something here that's not talked about enough in modern society. It's unexplored. All we hear about is the big three, Islam, Judaism, Christianity. And then we do have this sort of interesting new age sphere of things where, like, astrology is in, and it's sort of what you were speaking to earlier with acupuncture. Like, people are into what I would call sort of like pop occult, like reading, getting tarot readings and all this kind of stuff. I mean, what is that? Do you think it's like a bastardization of this classic witchcraft and magical principles that, like, go back since the beginning of humans? Like, what do you make of all this new agey garbage, if it is garbage?
A desperate desire for longevity. I do. I think all of it goes around. I think a lot of it goes around the idea of surviving and improving the quality of your life. I do. And we do it all sorts of different ways. And we got to remember, we've had the first true emperor of China conquered everything. And he made the mistake of eating mercury every day.
Right.
I mean, this is the most powerful man of that world, one of the most powerful men the history has ever known. And he took mercury every day because he thought it made him better. People think they know what's right for them. And they can only do it from the context of the culture they're at. So we know we are going, so we now have all these medical answers. And we're noticing medical answers are getting us a bit farther, but they're not getting us happier. So all this, everything else is this desperate search for a quality of life. Because if you ever know one thing, if there's any stereotype of witch I always love, I can name you all sorts of them, is that witches live a long time. You know, they're seen as ancient beings. Once they get there, they're like, oh yeah, how old are they? I don't know, 100, 126, 128. You hear these stories. Oh. I'm hoping it's true. I have out-survived every male in my family. I'm from a cancer-ridden family. So one of the things that dealt with me personally is that I lost a brother at 23 to the hate crime. He was a performer and he got murdered. So that doesn't it. But my grandfather died at 51 from cancer. My grandmother died. My father died of drinking, driving, and tumor. My mother died at 65. So I've had all these people with cancers in their family.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's all over my family. And I decided I wasn't going to do it. And I have yet to have a cancer, knock on wood, because of my path. Because I seek everything in balance. I try to understand everything. I don't let the stresses build up. So there's all these things we know about genetic triggers, but a lot of them are caused by stress or some sort of thing you bring into your environment. And I'm always looking at what brings things into an environment that can affect me. And that's real magic to survive and to feel this energy at 50, I'm going to be 58, when most of your family's already been dead. I don't have anyone to rely on. So I look at the elders of the traditions and of this previous generation, which are going strong and older than me. Hmm?
Wow. So if somebody is, if somebody is going around and talking about, you know, like, twin flames and this is all this stuff, all the pop stuff I see from these new age people, looking at the stars and talking about what season it is and whatnot. I mean, are you okay with it?
Sure I am. I believe so. So I believe in hyper reality. So outside of what you eat, drink, sleep, making sure your family's safe and making sure you have a warm roof over your head, almost everything else is actually something we created, a story we're telling each other. Hmm?
Yeah.
And so that's called hyperreality. So if more people are talking about twin flames, even if they don't completely understand it, they're talking about it. That's good.
Yeah.
And so it's about cracking the ice, even if it's bad. I mean, how many people learned the classic music, like pianos and everything, through Bugs Bunny?
Right.
Kill the rabbit. So I have no problem pop culture. So Sabrina, Bewitched is one of my most important stories. It was the entire story of Wicca that emerged. So you start with Samantha as a witch.
Yeah.
Right? Black and white. Lost her name because she took on her husband. Being badgered by her family for giving up her power, right? And living under this man, this patriarch, who loved her, but had to say, you have to give up your magic. That's the first episode. Hmm? The last episode. What was the last episode?
I don't know.
Full spectrum color. She was queen of the witches. And in full, and her husband was a good companion. And told her she could use her magic. Should use her magic. She ended up queen of the witches. Full color. That whole spectrum story was about female empowerment. And it really had a lot to do with some of the youngest the witches of the time, Starhawk and others, being able to move out to become those powerful icons. Pop culture moves us. It moves us hard. Hmm?
So you're telling me, wait a minute, do you think the writers of Bewitched were trained in this at all? Did they know what they were talking about?
No. The magic is completely, utterly wish magic. It's a genie magic. We would see I Dream a Genie. There's no way that magic is anywhere. You know, there's no words, there's no very few invocations. It's very much Disney-fied. It's very much what it looks like. It's meant to be a mechanism. But the ideas underneath it, yes, you know, the strong woman standing up for yourself. So the ideas I very feeling like was very much in that sense with the Dianic witches of the time, the feminists of the time who were practicing this magic. Hmm?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Who was the better Darren?
Oh, the better Darren? I always thought the second Darren was better. I do.
Really? I love Dick York.
I did love Dick York too. And it was so sad how he got, you know, he did not leave of his own accord, but his body's. So that was always so sad.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we'll find out. But at the end of the day, he was just, I hate to say it, my favorite character, of course, was Aunt Claire. Clara. Yeah. You know, the bumbling witch who never gets it right.
Yes.
But even then she still has her own power.
Do you have those like archetypes, like in witch school when you're training people? Do you look at people and you're like, oh yeah, that's the bumbling one?
I try not to. I'm human.
Are you, but, so yeah. That does that make you does that make you aunt? I don't know.
Claire, no, actually, I'm much more like her father. I'm a little bit stern. I'm a little bit, except I wear hippie clothes.
Yeah, man.
I'd love to be saying Dr. Bombay, but I don't do that very well.
I feel like you're Stoner Gandalf.
There could be. Yeah, very much.
I mean, I don't know. You seem like kind of a fun guy with like wise, like perspective on all this.
Oh, sure. And one of the best things that have happened, you know, one of the things that has made witches more capable is this idea of the legalization of cannabis. I mean, there's now all sorts of magic books coming out about the old powers of cannabis. It's coming out.
Yeah, where do you, you know what? This is something I always wonder because I've heard two sides of it. Some of the people that are a little more like not mainstream, but a little less into the spells, talking more about like surrendering the ego and becoming one with the source consciousness and all this stuff. They're like, cannabis is a false version of a pure spiritual experience. It's a false it's a false version of surrendering ego. But then there are other people that are like, nah, man, people were doing drugs in these temples and having experiences like none other. What is your thoughts on marijuana?
So for me, to be perfectly frank, I'm a lifelong smoker. Okay. Now that I can say that, remember, I used to be hidden. For me, marijuana was a shadow drug, and it has a lot of toxicity and a lot of power being a shadow drug. What right. I mean is I would have experiences with it, but man, the idea of standing in front of a cop smoking a joint was very liberating when I did it recently. So cannabis as a habit is as addictive as anything. Nicotine has been used as a powerful transformational drug. Cannabis used properly is a transformational drug. Mushrooms are a transformational drug. So all these things are transformational. And the way that they were used before in history was under setting and dosage. They were very much practiced. They were under very different circumstances. They just found a cave that was used for 500 years for meditation with Datura, which is a hallucinogenic, that they shared this experience. So in structured environments with a control over it, they're very powerful tools and have been used for a long time. But like in Don Juan said in Caro Castaneda, what you use as a young man makes you a fool as an old man. So it's one thing to use it when you're young, but the idea is that you grow out of it. You get these experiences without those triggers once you learn how. It's like having training wheels and all of a sudden you don't need the training wheels anymore.
Yeah.
So, and that's really where a lot of where I feel it is. Now, cannabis, if you want to have a meditational effect, you have to actually treat it in that form. So yeah, if you're out there smoking a joint and thinking it's meditation, no, you're getting high. But if you have a small amount, you take that small amount, you do the breathing exercise, it can absolutely drive that meditation deeper. Mm-hmm.
Really? And
yeah, absolutely. If you're doing it. And equally so, there are people who reach those states without those drugs. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I wonder if, and in general, this is, I mean, look, Ed, here's where I'm at with magic with a K. I think it's so interesting. I think in the same way that okay, I'll do the metaphor here. Like a hypnotist could just take people into trance and do what they have to do to like be like, and now you're much happier than you ever were, and your subconscious is adjusting, and wake the person up, and then they're feeling better. But then you add neurolinguistic programming and you add all these other techniques and you start being like, well, you know what? This subconscious reprogramming stuff gets more interesting, and there are different rituals and different tactics and different directions you could go down. Sometimes with magic, with a K, I'm going, I'm wondering if ultimately why... Why does it have to be so complex? Like I think that's the, you know, like I've seen the scales of consciousness before, or who was it? Ken Wilber. Yes. Ken Wilber was the guy who really kind of pointed this out. He mapped out like the spectrum of consciousness, and he was looking at different states of different levels of reality. And he kind of looked at the occult in the new age and what I normally classify and understand as magic in that like space. That's like it's like the transpersonal realm. It's like a little bit, it's not quite like surrendering completely and being egoless, but it's not quite like having an ego on earth either. It's like in that realm. And like often these guys that come from a perspective where they're really honoring Eastern tradition are saying like, yeah, you can play in that realm of witches and new age for a little bit, but like, you could go very egoic. You could become this powerful sorcerer and lead into darkness, and you don't want to stay there for long. Like, there's a better place. It's a cleaner place. It's a purer place. To me, it's not as fun a place, Ed. That's why I'm going to be interviewing witches till the day I pass. But like, what would you say to that? Like that criticism that like, it's like kind of not the highest level of spiritual exploration.
I tell them, are you an angelic folk? Are you the Greater Galactic Federation? Do you think you're going to heaven? How can I help you in this lifetime go to that place you want to go to? I would like you off my planet as soon as possible. I've given this speech.
Really? Would you say that to Ken Wilber?
I would. I have. I've actually taken on, I haven't told it to him, but I've said it to a number of these people. And I would do it. Absolutely. If you don't want to be here, leave. But leave our planet intact. You know, a problem with almost all of these, and the reason I left Christianity, is they want to leave an apocalyptic, dead world. They see it as a genocide. We can't go to have a new heaven and a new earth until we genocide this one. I don't think so. That's unfair. It's not a real belief. It's sick. It's planetary suicide. The Armageddon apocalypse, and I am one of the best trained eschatologists in the world. I understand how the world can end in 1,000 ways because of my youth. It was one of the biggest toxic pieces I carried for my Christianity. And in Wicca, I'm going to be here in 5,000 years, 10,000 years. You know, I believe in reincarnation. I believe in the re-energy of that. So I have to treat the world in such a way. So, yeah, all these people are saying, oh, I'm starseed. We're going to change it to 5D and all this other sort of harsh kind of spiritual realities. And I say, well, what's wrong with this world? And the pain in this world, the hardship of this world, really hurts people's souls, and I get that. But we have also never been more abundant, healthier, and happier as a population than we are now. It's just we have this sort of programming that makes us want to self-destruct.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm? I mean, like, what about even, okay, that's amazing. That would you say that to David R. Hawkins?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You would say, I mean, he was very against the esoteric and the occult. So, not against it, but he was critical of it. Sure. I mean, and you know, it seems like applied kinesthesiology and believing that, you know, that there is like this place where it's just like, I mean, it feels simpler. Like it feels simpler than taking on spells. But like, I want you, Ed, I mean, look, again, like I said, I want you to sell me on it. Like, why are spells worth investing in rather than just like extreme meditation where there's no spells whatsoever?
Because it's because of how you're programmed. You've got to find out how you're programmed. And for a lot of people, we're programmed in the same as any code. So we have to pick up our societal names, our everything else. So for me to go out and say, by my will, I shall succeed, which is a very simple incantation, by my will, I should succeed at. The more I say that, the more my mind knows that it has no choice. And the universe responds to it. I believe in a conscious universe. If you don't believe that the universe is conscious, then it's hard to do that. If you don't want to accept that there are small miracles in the day, if you don't want to say, hey, I was just thinking about my friend and they text me. It used to be they called me. It used to be a lot cooler when they would call.
Yes.
But there was a time we would not. My kids are always frightened. Said my telephone was attached to a wall and it was attached to a tail, and we didn't know who was calling. Heaven help us.
Yes.
But you'd have this experience where, oh, I need to talk to my friend, and they'd call, right? The morphic fields. I think these are all just different ways for people to manipulate that, the morphic fields, the strata of the quantum universe, that sort of thinking of who we are. And I think it's coming unglued. So in a lot of ways, I think it's uncoming includes from us having a common ground. So we're having all these sort of parallel realities emerge inside our reality. We can see it. You can talk to somebody and they will swear by their facts, and you know they're not true in your world, but it's true in theirs. And they write the history, and we're coming to a conflict where this idea of psychology being right and magic being right, they're probably very close to each other, just from a different format, a different set of energies. There's probably that flow state. I love flow states. But we have that from chanting. We know that we call that the trance. So there's a lot of similar practices. And of course there would be. Psychology was outlawed with tarot cards and magic in the early 1900s under the same bill. So they have some of the same sources. So of course there's techniques going back and forth. I can't convince anyone that magic is real, ultimately, but I cannot tell you that synchronicities are real. I can explain to you things that happen in your life. And then if you accept that your imagination is really the source of all magic, that the imagination is very real. They go after us so hard to stop the imagination, but it's very real. And what is magic? Magic is nothing but taking something from inside your mind and making it exist in the world. That's your imagination.
Yeah.
They've gone after it for a very long time. It's the only thing that's going to save us from AI.
Yeah.
And that's where magic of the future is important. I teach people to expand their imagination.
Yeah. This is good. I'm starting to get with you a little bit here. I think I mean, what is different is, or at least what I'm sussing out from this is the power of language in all of this. The things that you're telling yourself, as well as the way you're even thinking about experiences on a day-to-day basis. Like I do wonder this is the grand hypothetical question I have for everybody that delves into a spiritual realm, and has constructs within that realm. If the world were to start over right now, would and there wasn't language, at least spoken language, would people still find these magical truths and incantations and principles? Like, do you believe in it that much? Or is there any source that would point to the fact that, like, yeah, the world's always been magical, despite what you think God has set up for you from, like, the beginning of Genesis? Like what happened before Genesis, Ed, I guess is sort of what I'm asking.
Well, there's a whole book that we put out about Genesis and about that was a separate creation, and that Cain went out and found his wife amongst the real humans. And the Genesis, actually, if you read it properly, it has two creations. The first one, the creation by the gods, then creation by a god.
Interesting.
If you read it properly. So the first chapter is about the first creation of man and woman. And then there was creation by a god to create a place. And that's why we can place Eden on the earth for some people, or whatever it was, but it was very much that sort of thing. And you hear in the story that Cain went out and found a wife. They had children. So that has always been the reinstatement or the reinforcement of the original idea that there were people. And oftentimes pagans call themselves the other people from this sort of Yahweh invasion kind of God, that basically I'm the only God. And it was never been that way. No, if you took back and reset it, my Gaius beliefs would remain. I would still show that I'm a human being and I have all of these things. So meditation would come back. All the organic stuff of my body that works in that way that I try to train, which I do, how I eat the plants, how I drink water and all that will be that. But no, the gods and things like that, they don't stay the same. The only when they are transmitted. People have made whole new gods and new creations and new thoughts when they've been isolated. And the truth is, I will offer you the biggest change in religion, and I mean it as religion, right? But it will not seem like it, this technology that existed. How many I would tell these people all the time, how many telephone numbers, you have to be a certain age to do it, do you remember from your youth?
Right.
And how many do you remember now? You've now accepted a worship object, a fetish that takes your mind and makes it easier for your mind to work.
Yeah.
And you're able to, and that fetish can answer any question in the world that you want, that you can think of the question.
Wow. Okay. That's a little mind bending. I kind of love that.
And that it is actually a wormhole that can make you connect with anyone on the planet that you know their code to.
Yeah.
Okay. And we call it a telephone, but it's a worship object. Try taking it away from people. And look how fast it came into our society. It became one of the central objects of ours. Faster than television, which was the fastest before radio. Radio is faster than telegraph.
So you believe, I definitely, I'm definitely interested in the techno magic thing and sort of that line of thinking, because I know you're very much on the forefront of that. But you look at technology as you look at occultic roots of it. Put it together a little more for me.
So let me give you Alexander Graham Bell. Okay. He didn't actually invent the telephone, but he got the patents and everything else. So he's been given it. And most people don't realize his wife, which was Hubbard, Jeanette Hubbard, basically was deaf. And he was really searching for telepathy. His early journals talk about telepathy. And he was trying to find a means to communicate with his wife more directly through sound. Telephone is the reception of it. Sir Isaac Newton did gravity and a number of things, but he was also known alchemist. He put out a book that his family destroyed. People are really angry of it, of magic. He believed he could explain gravity in terms of magic as much as it is in science. Einstein said, the world, if you think of the world as cosmic, then it truly is. It's beyond us to understand awe and wonder. We're allowed to think as big as we want, and we can find it. But what we do is we find reinforcements in science. So magic is going to go through it's going through a revolution right now. As we see the internet grow, cyberspace, which is such a magical space, pure imagination, you're going to see more and more people be able to adapt to a pagan world and want to live in a greener world. And we manifest that through the improvement of technology, not going backwards.
What is then techno magic in your definition?
Okay, so this has two different definitions as I've been teaching. One is using technology like you would use magic, psychic powers. So if you can see through any camera in the world, that's clairvoyance. If you can hear anything from any mic, that's clairaudience. The internet is a manifestation of the Akashic records.
Yes, you're right.
What is a Zoom room but teleportation on an astral plane? What is VR but the creation of worlds in the astral plane? Everything about cyberspace is magical. It's an imagination machine. And I said the core of the witch is to teach and be able to use their imagination so they can find more solutions and more ways to live. So cyberspace is magical, everything else. And there is a chance we can upload our mind so it could actually become a literal heaven. There's people talking about 35 by 2035. So you have that.
Yeah.
So the second thing you have is that, are you going to control that? So I tell people right now, we create code to create, and the spirits are summoned. If you have an Alexa or a Siri, you have a cyber spirit that you can program or other people can program for you that will answer to you. And they will make things automagical for you. So right now, you want to be on Loop Podcast, this podcast, you could go, hey, what's happening on that podcast? And it would answer you. And if you're not on Alexa in the next 2 or 3 years, you're not going to be on spirits that are going to talk to you in your house, made of intelligent electricity, commanded in cores of crystal. Have I not described you, Atlantis?
It's pretty good. Now look, you know, here's where I'm going to come back to you at, and I'm going to say, it seems it is okay. So we have the imagination, we have the impossibility of like, could these things actually happen? Then we have the manifestation of them, which are the actual technology themselves. So it's like going inside your head, becoming real. That is magic. But like, where's the what's the supernatural part? Like, where's the actual, where's the mystical component of this? Is there one?
There is. So for me, I'll give you an example of one that happened to me. Unfortunately, right now, I start with the idea of being magical subjective and to a scientific objective. So I've already given you one where we did go from magical subjective, but we're a little bit closer to objective because I could prove my sight. So I can prove to you that I cast a spell called the Oracle on Halloween Day 2018, right? I can show it to you. I can. There's a whole bunch of it online. I do a lot of stuff online because of this, because I'm so hard to try to prove magic. I am. This is like the biggest thing. I want something so acceptable to everybody that everybody goes, okay, how did that happen?
That's what I want too. That's why you're on the show.
And that's why I'm working for the singularity of that sort of element. So I did the Oracle spell, and I said what I wanted more than anything else was to have the psychic fairs go online. I wanted them to go online because I just wanted it. 1 year later, COVID happened, and literally I'm in a world where I'm actually taking the psychic fair completely online. There's no other way to do it. Everybody joined me, even though everybody was opposed to me 1 year before. Now, that's creepy to some people, and it's weird, but and I took advantage of the opportunity was there, and so I can give it a phrase. I can give it a story. I can give it a sort of element to it. But for me, that happening was like, okay, that's a magical moment. Wow, I didn't want it to happen that way, but okay, I got it. So then I executed. And I did a Halloween psychic fair online, and people did seances and had creepy effects. I'm always looking at photographs. I'm just like every other with magic. People don't realize it, and I'm very grateful. But I don't know why we haven't had magic hunters before. Like I like to apply paranormal principles to people casting magic and stuff. And I really wish, just like the ghost hunters, I had something I could show you so perfect, so pristine. Or the UFO hunters, I can't. But I can show you a lot of abilities that let you make your own mind, your own decisions, and give you some experiences.
What? Wait, I wanted to be part of the Magic Hunter show. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, but you see what I'm saying? No one's applying these sort of paranormal things to witches. That's how outside and taboo witches are, even to the paranormalists. Here you are, you have beings who supposedly work with the magical and supernatural forces. And they're barely used, barely touched.
That's what that's what intrigues me about it. That's what I'm saying. Like, like the occult section of the bookstore has a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, I have a friend that's involved with the hermetic principles, and you know, he's just he got enrolled with the Golden Dawn of New York City. They reached out to him, and I'm sitting here going like, yo, this sounds great, but like, what are they doing in there? Like, are they just chanting, or like, is there actually a vortex opening up in the center of the floor that people are like taking, you know, swimming in and then coming out of? Like, I don't fully understand what is going on at the higher level of Mason meetings that would be described magical, if that's even true. But if there is something, like, what is it? What is going on? And why aren't people interested enough? Because I certainly am.
So there is something called the group mind, the mastermind, the group mind. And it happens at concerts, okay? But it happens anywhere. The idea that you get your mind synchronized so that they all work together, it's like you can share each other's thoughts. There's a state that you get into. And they do rituals that helps them get into those states by those practices. But if you wanted to know what I wanted to talk about, so you get out to a rock band, a fairly popular rock band, people know their music and things like that. And if you step back and watch them, they become one thing. Their minds all kind of come together. You can tell the ones who aren't really into it, the dad at the side, the mom waiting for her kid, you know, the businessman who's just brought his whole daughter's class to show off for her, talking on the phone. You can see those guys. But if you look at that daughter's class, they're all swaying together. They're singing it together. They join into this sort of trance state where they're all together.
Yeah.
Everybody at a concert was within 5 minutes of being everybody's friend.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that is something, and that's a huge trance. So that kind of energy, you know, forms up that mastermind. Well, in magic is that you take more and more control of it. Instead of a band trying to excite your dopamines and your oxytocin and all those types of things to get you to be really happy, sweaty. And then when you go out of there, you know, you're so thrilled that you listen to them. A worship object, a center of grace, a center of where we all say, you're gods. We call them rock gods, right? For a reason. Huh? And but then inside of like a Mason's group or a covenant circle, these minds can each act more independently. We can get deeper into our thoughts. We can feel that energy that you get at a rock concert, except at a much more detailed and a much more higher level of transmission.
Interesting. So wait a minute. Like, I'm not sure what you're allowed to tell me, but like, okay, let's go to the Heights right now. I mean, Aleister Crowley supposedly opened up a portal in a hotel room in a hotel in Central Park, and a gray man came out of it, or at least he like conversed with the gray man. That seems a little weird and out there. Have you experienced anything like that? And or is that what's going on? Are people opening portals?
Yes, I have actually experienced that. Okay.
What?
I have actually experienced that. And I've experienced it sober. And it was a very bizarre series of things. I did one of the Crowley's rituals before it, and I did it, and I had that experience. I always question it because it's always like, was it put in my mind? Was it derived? But yes, I've had a conversation with the gray man. So if, you know, and I've gone with others who have. But I can't go out there and tell you that I have, and nor does, you know, actually, I haven't told anybody in years. It was something I did when I was younger, in my 20s. And I had that experience. It was very short-lived, and it speckled out almost as fast as it happened. It was like there, it was there, it was there, there, and then we all, and everybody working with me, we startled. We did. I'll be honest with you, I startled. And I never tried it again.
Oh my gosh, that is profoundly disturbing that could happen.
Right. And I question everything. Everything I say, I always say, question it, you know, just take your own consideration. These are my experiences. And I can be just, you know, like other people, I could be a great storyteller and just to tell the stories, but these are stories I actually believe in. These are things that have happened to me. And you don't have to accept that these things are real. In fact, don't. But understand that they are to me, and there's lots and lots of people who share similar stories that they believe. Ultimately, it's hard for people to understand. All of this may be, absolutely all of it may be bullshit.
Oh, great.
So I have to live a life. So the ultimate answer to a witch is you live as is. That's the thing. You have to live as is. If you want to be in the middle of a woods, you can't wish your way to the woods. You have to actually travel to the woods. The way the world's set up, you have to go out and figure out how to afford those woods. Hard truth of our reality. It's not real. That wood should be available to you as much as anybody. But to constrain ourselves, our governments have created these rules where we can't own that land. We've changed. In America, one time you go out west, grab a piece of land and live on it. Are you sure with the government? So our resources, our commodities are going. So we still have to live in that world of diminishing. Everything's becoming commoditized. People are mad at me when they go, well, water should be a free right. Well, how much water? Who should be providing it? You know, water is a commodity. Literally, it has been. It always has been. So is soil and all of that. None of this is in our world is free right. So as a witch, I have to see it as is. There's terrible things going on. But when I do see it as is, as the way I feel it, I get so many wonderful things that happen. And I get to do things that other people just dream about, and I have these wonderful experiences.
What is something like? I need to know what's something that people just dream about that you're able to do.
Well, I've been twice blessed by the Dalai Lama. I go to the Parliament of World Religions from being a street kid, and so that's some of the things I get to do.
You were blessed by the Dalai Lama. How do you? What? When? I didn't know.
1993, I worked for the Parliament of World Religions as a volunteer staff member. Stage management. And so, you know, I was in a line when after he did his last speech, he'd been there for a week in Chicago. He blessed the line. And I actually became friends with his Badish, the guy who carries his wallet. It's a very interesting story. After that, So I had years of conversation before he fell, before he was lost behind the walls of China. I've gotten to see a lot of like really, and so I've gotten to see a lot of amazing things like that. Actually, you know,
and you believe it's magic that got you all these opportunities. Like you're deeply convinced.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It's 100%. Absolutely. And some of it has been things I've had in dreams. Some of it's been exercises I've done. Some of it has been chance. But yes, I absolutely do. I'm convinced. I'm Ed the Pig. And I really do believe I live a magical life. If at the end of the world, somebody said he converted to Christianity, know that they are lying through their teeth. I want to come back here. This is the life I live. Yes.
So for the record, Ed the Pig, and you heard it here in Open Loops, December 2020, if he dies, he did not die a Christian. Remember that, everybody.
I haven't actually said that in public before. I just realized that. I've said that privately before, but yeah.
a lot of strange things come out here.
Yeah, it does.
yeah, tell me more things you haven't said in public. Wait, do you have any, like, what's the, do you have, like, is there a dark secret to all this witchery? Like, what's, like, is there, can you, you don't have to tell me what the story is, but I'm curious, like, is there an incident that you're like, yeah, this was the most magical thing that I have never told anybody has ever happened before, but trust me, Greg, if you were there, you would never even question it for a second.
So my best, the biggest thing that ever happened, I've told people more or less. Let me think about that for a minute. Something that is, I remember, I just saw my daughter. That's why I don't remember it. It's when my daughter came to me when she was 4 years old and says, Dad, do you remember when I was the mother and you were the child or the boy? And she went on for a little while talking about this world. That really was like, wow, it made me kind of say, okay, maybe reincarnation is a thing, and help me look at that. My leprechaun. Okay.
Wait, tell me about the leprechaun, please.
The leprechaun told me last year the coins were going to stop. Yeah, you know, that everybody, there's something magical. So if you really want to make money, this is true, and you can actually do this, is set up a fairy well, bless it to the fairies, and remember to feed your fairies candy, little objects, crystals. But put out a fairy well, they will make people drop coins into it. You can put this fairy well anywhere, a little wishing well, put it anywhere, and people will stop dropping coins into it. They're compulsed to do it. Yes. If you set it up and say the fairies. And then here's what it is. And then he showed me the next slide. He said, why this was so important. He says, well, then you take all those coins, and he took me in my mind to this bank. And it looked like Harry Potter's bank, because one of the problems with magic is they take it out of your mind if they don't have something that they want to show you. And he handed all the coins to him, and they came back and handed him a piece of gold. And it says, that's how you can turn into capital. And if you don't do it soon, coins are going to be in crisis. That was 2019. I told everybody about that. So this year, I had a little girl that nobody knew it, a little girl here in Chicago. And she did it here in Chicago. She put it up on our front porch. And she made over $30 in a week.
Okay.
She just finished that. And she claims she saw the leprechaun.
Wait a minute. Are leprechauns real?
Yes, I believe it. People believe it really seriously. I mean, it's a matter. The problem is, do you believe it or not? Is there a quantum or a set of life forms that live with us, that live at a different vibration up in the other 98%, that live a very different life, which means they have their kingdoms and things like that, and they're living at a different vibrational energy. All of this is about the idea, do we have other entities on the planet living at multiple frequencies that occasionally get crossed in our brains, which are giant radio boxes receiving messages, energies.
I love this. And I love this line of thinking.
And the and ultimately, what we just discovered and they found in 2020 is that they're almost convinced that there is a quantum element to our brain. They detected it. They found it.
Yeah. But what about, like, you know, like, so a leprechaun is, I'm looking at the Wikipedia definition right now. Who knows whose agenda is behind that? But diminutive supernatural being in Irish folklore, classed by some folklore, Irish folklore. So tell me this, when you're telling me when you're seeing a leprechaun, Are you seeing a little green man in like Lucky Charms? Like, are you actually seeing that, or is it a spirit as a result of drugs? Is it a hallucination of like what you imagine a leprechaun might be based on pop culture? Like, what is that? How does it manifest for you?
So for me, it manifested much a little bit stronger, not quite into the same image. But certainly it's very similar to it. So the problem is that they have to use imagery that things that we've received. We have to understand it. And for me, it was very much it was much more elegant to me. But I didn't see it. I said I saw it in my dreams. These were the visions I wrote down when I was dealing with them.
Okay.
And I saw that, but this young lady, Beverly, who is a redhead, of course, and she's had it. She described a very different creature. And what she said, what she saw there was a small man, right, with wings, who was wearing a brown suit. So he's talking more of a pixie, but she thought it was a leprechaun. She described a pixie, but she described it as a leprechaun. Mm-hmm.
Who is this little girl? This is a little girl in your neighborhood, or?
Yeah, one of my friends. And in the building, and then she's doing fairy thing, and I told her how to set up a fairy little fairy thing, and she built it.
Do parents get nervous when you talk about witchcraft with kids?
Not in my where I stay in Chicago, because they know, have known me for 20 something years.
Yeah. I was gonna say that must be kind of a weird thing to. I'm sure, like if you're like at an event and people are like, oh, there's Ed, he's a fun guy. Oh. You start like talking about spells, like parents might be like, okay, that's a little. I don't know.
So, my daughter calls me the world's oldest teenager. I do have a love of entertaining kids. And parents do get I am careful about where a parent's discretion is. Right. I'm also the guy that if your spouse or husband knows I'm coming in, I'm their friend. I'm the one that says to your spouse, okay, oh my God, he's back in town. Don't do anything stupid.
Right.
I'm an adventurer. So I'm that guy too. And everybody goes like this. Young ladies, they occasionally has got older, not as much. But I'm always saying, yes, I am the guy that your mother warned you about.
Are you? What was young?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's one reason I love to be a witch, because the moral ethics of that allowed for those types of expressions. Let me be honest. It was a place I could express openly, being openly sexual, being sex positive, not being confined into that world of just very strict, very shame sex. So that's the one thing witches do. Fires around the naked. I've danced naked around a fire. People ask me that. Yes, I have many times, and I look forward to doing it again in the future. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Then we have festivals that are public, like Starwood and Pagan Spirit Gatherings. We have festivals where we gather. So the idea of witches gathering in masses out in the countryside, dancing to the woods, is a very real thing.
Are they having orgies too? Are they having orgies?
I really am. So this is a question they have, and everybody who's a pagan says, where are they? Actually, no, it's not. They're not responsible. Are there orgies? Probably. Have I attended one? Probably.
that's fair.
That sort of thing. But no, that's not really in the mainstream, especially with AIDS and especially with the sexual transmitted disease. It became that. Are there people who practice polyamory who can have encounters that are more than just monogamous? Absolutely, all over the place. Hmm? But the idea of the full-blown orgy is a Hollywood fantasy.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, you've opened up a lot of loops in my head. This is great. Yeah. I'm wondering about, I'm thinking about the sex life of witches right now. Kind of a popular topic, actually. And especially with Christianity being like threatened by it. I mean, if that's whatever the heck Salem actually was, I think there's often like an association of like witches with being these promiscuous young ladies who are going to corrupt the men in town because Satan's going through them. Like, first of all, Christianity completely ruined witchcraft, didn't it? A and B, like, should we be threat? I mean, you're saying the witches are pretty sexual, but like, is that something to be threatened by?
Sure it is. So
great.
Okay. So anything that takes you away from essential core belief that gets you an automated response. Okay. So anything that gets you away from the automated response, and that's the church and state system. Go to school, get a job, watch TV, eat your dinner. This is the trend today. This is the trend tomorrow. Today it's purple shoes. Tomorrow it's green shoes. Today it's purple suits. Tomorrow it's brown suits. Now we're back to Victorian. They want the ability to whip around the mind, that sort of collective mind that works just like I talked about a rock concert or inside a ritual. We have this sort of super mind that we play with and we whip around. If I am giving you a different story, if I'm giving you a different set of feelings, if I'm giving you a different chemical program in your mind, I'm a threat to that system. And so what's happened is witchcraft ruins marriages, absolutely, because it empowers the woman or empowers the man sometimes. It can destroy families if you become a witch. Let me not kid you. You thought it was bad to come out gay? Coming out of the witch is still really difficult, really dark. It can be very bad. Lots of people are still hidden in the closet because of it. This is the dark side of it. There's still, we're pretty open on it because we have a Hollywood moment.
Yeah.
But let the Supreme Court make a few decisions against witchcraft, which is very possible, right?
Are witches born into it, though? Or if you have a witch school, like, are you training it? You know, like when you see they're coming out of the closet. Yeah, I'm wondering, like, you know, because when I think of gay, it's like, well, this is the way I was born.
So there's two beliefs in this. First of all, you train. I'm a trained witch. I was not necessarily born a witch. Nobody in my family was a witch. They were, you know, a mixture of Catholic and Southern Baptist, as I spoke of. So I was trained into it. But the sense of me being a magical person has always been with me since I was a child. So I learned to express it. And I was able to come out of that, you know, I never came out of the closet because I became very open. Oh, yeah, I'm a witch. But there was a day I recognized. I came out of the closet for myself. Oh, I'm a witch. Okay, I get it. So there's that energy that you have inside of it. So you can train to be a witch. And there are people born into it, too. Absolutely. I know a lot of people. My friend Sarah Wiles was born into it. And so her background is deeper. She's a very good seance. And she does other things, but she's amazing at a lot of the different sort of works that you do around Salem. And that's her culture is that. So we have both. But the vast majority of witches today, the hot witches today, no, they're all trained. They're all training.
Some people more magical than others just because of their birth, their genetics or whatever, where their tradition?
Sure. Sure. And there are some people better at certain magics than others. Absolutely. Just like there's people who are better at basketball or baseball, or there's talent. So there's and that is it. So anyone could be a genius. Talent is the ability to hit a target that nobody else can. So that's the question of talent. You can have it. But genius, which witchcraft really is about unleashing your genius, is being able to hit a target that nobody else sees.
Interesting.
So I try to teach genius, but certainly having talent makes it easier to hit the target. Absolutely. And people who are raised without, the biggest part of it is just the ability to let go of your inhibitions, that none of this is real, that doubt. Just to accept the doubt. And even if you have doubts after about the reality of it, saying, did I enjoy it? Did it make my life better? Did it improve me?
Wow. And you're teaching people this. I mean, you've got witchschool.com, which I mean, close to, I'm looking at the numbers right now. I mean, over 2,800,000 people registered from over 190 countries. I mean, that's close to 300,000 witches and people that want to learn this stuff. Is there enough room for all this power?
Oh, sure. Again, first of all, it comes from inside. So there's plenty of power room, just like there's plenty of electricity, like there's plenty of wind. In fact, that's why magics are elemental. We talk about the same energies in the same way. It's about the flow of energy. The more energy you generate, the more you flow. So if there are more witches, there's more energy being generated. There's more belief being generated. It makes it easier for it to happen. And I actually believe the way the reality works, the reality bends towards that. So, yeah. And so when you're positive.
Okay. No, go ahead. Sorry.
When you're positive, you tend to have positive things, but that does not stop negative things from happening.
I was going to ask you, like, if you manifested this online psychic fair, which some people could be like, I was going to ask you the question, like, oh, did he cause COVID? Which I don't think you did. But like, it is. I mean, yeah, actually, let's answer that question. Like, what's going on there? Have to happen for that online thing, or would it have happened anyways?
So I believe that it showed me where to move. It woke up the idea of movement. So that I was prepared for it to happen, crisis and that thing. Oh, no, I have a COVID embarrassment. I'm actually embarrassed about my reaction to COVID. So I was working at the Salem Psychic Fair, biggest Salem Psychic Fair in the country. And I did really well. I did a bunch of different people. You know, I got to do lots of readings. I enjoyed the time. But almost persistently, and I even told my best friend about it, that something happened in March, April, May. And I kept telling people, you need to go ahead and take a vacation around this time. There's going to be a time for you to need to get to sit back and take some energy for yourself. Over and over again. This was back in October. In November, since, wow, that was really weird. And I didn't catch it. There was a disease coming that everybody was going to shut down, even though I predicted it over 50, 60, 70 times.
I saw it. Oh, wow.
Okay. And all in the same time frame. So I never, so this is where the messenger gets ahead of the message. I had all these readings that had a commonality of going into taking vacations in my mind, March, April, May, because I was in a very positive space. I didn't want to talk about it. So I was unwilling to see, wait, there's going to be a major, and I haven't predicted two deaths during that period of time, you know, of older people. And I didn't see it as a threat because my mind couldn't get to that message, even though I had all the evidence of it. This is what makes it still an art. This is what makes it very difficult.
Yeah.
Because if anyone would have said, you know, do you think it could have been a disease? If anybody gave me that message, I could have gone, you know, let me put that out on the internet. I put out my predictions all the time. And I live and by, you know, how good and how bad they do. Because it's okay. If I make a mistake, great. But I did not put out the COVID thing, but I saw it in my readings. And I talked to people about that afterward. I saw the vacation. So I misjudged that message. That happens to psychics all the time.
Yeah, I wonder about and also the collective response. Like, if everybody is talking about the power of prayer and the power of meditation, and if you have almost 300,000 witches enrolled in this school, like, what is there a spell they've been casting to rid the world of this trauma? Is that something you're able to do? Because it feels like healing should be something a group of witches and group mind should be able to somehow, I don't know, believe or bring about, rather.
It's the number one job of the witch in history, to soothe the dead, to talk about the living and the dead. Oftentimes you see they're the roles that they play. They are the ones who, not the shamans, not everybody else, unless they are shamans, but these women folk, these healing folk, they put the objects in the burial grounds and prepare the body. That's very traditional. And they talk to them about it. Women are far more receptive to the idea of the dead because they're the portal of the living. Men have nothing to do with it other than giving a small amount of their energy and body to the child. Women are the portal to life, period. Only half of it we got. So they can talk to the dead more. They're more attached to it historically. So yeah, we have that. On Halloween, 10/31 at the full moon, my tradition, the Lady Elizabeth Hamilton led it, but we did a wailing ritual where we did it on Zoom. And we had people from all over the world working together. And we did a wailing chant where people cried and people were crying. And they just, because when other people were allowed to cry, you were allowed to cry. So we gave them this moment of being able to cry for all our members. Because my church has lost more than 20 people to COVID so far in friends and family.
Right.
And so did others. So we gave out this wailing ritual. So yeah, we can do that. Mediumship. The ability to speak to the dead. It really is about comfort a lot of times. People think that people go to seances like a lot. But the truth is the average person goes 1, 2, or 3 seances and they get the message that they needed. Well, that's the truth. That's the bulk of the seance type of people. People who just want to figure out they're dead.
Who could win in a magic fight? Shaman versus a witch?
Shamans are a lot more brutal. It depends on the moment and where we're talking about. But most shamans are a lot more brutal because they're from a hunter class. They're much more willing to use blood.
What? No, shamans use blood? Is there? Didn't you write a book at one point? Or I read something about you that you had some sort of book about the like a great history of like witch, like a big witch feud or the history of like witches battling. Like
Witch Wars Defense Manual. Oh, yeah. It's all the different techniques you use to fight people, and some of it's psychological, some of it's legal, and some of it's magical. Yeah, how to fight witch wars, because people were attacking each other. The early days in the early 2000s, when witch war was really starting, and the internet was starting to mix up groups that had never been mixed up before.
Yeah,
imagine red ants, black ants, green ants. You know how ants are. The early pagan community of the early 20th century was very much like ants. We had gotten so used to being in our isolated things, came over the top of it. They completely disrupted the community and changed how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the ants went at each other. And I wrote a book because I was so mad and frustrated to kind of put an end, to kind of give people tools to stop fighting by winning the fights, because nobody was winning the fights. It's like everybody was shooting at each other, but nobody knew how to hit each other. Yeah, I'm famous.
What does a witch fight look like? Like, on American Horror Story, there's that show, they did a season, Coven, that was all about witches, and it was all about just like these. I mean, obviously it's Hollywood, and they were like, I guess my imagination is pointing me to a place where like girls are like using psychokinesis and like putting their hands up, and the other witches are just like getting thrown up against the wall. Like fires are starting. Like, what exactly? How brutal does it get?
So it's a lot more psychological, unfortunately. I mean, people do cast spells on each other. And there's been elements where people come down with rashes, they come down sick. There's some things I can explain like that. Most of it is reputational. They attack each other terribly through gossip, trying to make sure that early in the 20th century, the number of people you could find to want to be a witch was limited because you didn't want to out yourself. You can't come out of the closet. And so as people learned and just did, it got to be really messy at times. But it did look like some people casting spells. I know somebody who used powders on another people, especially down in New Orleans. It was really kind of that sort of chemical warfare, I would call it. But it's spells and powders that are ancient. But most of it is to destroy the other person's reputation and standing in the community. It's what we do to witches when we do it to ourselves. And that's what it's as much about talking about that too. How to stand up, not to let your reputation be destroyed so you can be burned at the stake and everybody just watches. There's a lot of that in there.
Yeah. That's so cool. Interesting. Okay. So to take it back to techno magic, because this is where we're going for a second. You know, you look at it and you mentioned the word singularity. Some people, especially and interestingly enough, people in offshoots of New Age and the occult, people that are very much, especially conspiratorial minded people that are very much like, oh, yes, there are these dark forces out there that people don't understand. They're looking at the advent of this technology, and the word being thrown around is technocracy. They talk about 5G. They talk about the plan by the elites to put us in isolation, scenarios where the tech is becoming like transhumanism and the idea that we're becoming AI and all this stuff, and they look at it as a grand threat. Where's the magic in that?
So first and foremost, I always go back to people and say, well, they're, of course, you're living your fear. We praise the past, are terrorized by the future, and we demonize the future and terrorize our present.
Great.
It's because we live in such a fear-based culture. Again, I go back to, I remember people saying, if you put the cell phone on next to your head, you're going to have brain cancer.
Right.
It didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
I still believe that, actually. I'm glad you just pointed out that I don't have to worry about that.
But it didn't. Now we've got these for 20 years. It didn't happen. We always want to find the toxics. People are saying, oh, they're going to put the microchip in vaccinations. Why? They just sold it to you for $1,200 and you're carrying it around in your hand. being tracked. I mean, your phone tracks you. I mean, so there's always these sort of beliefs that we want to be afraid of the future. We're unwilling to accept it. So the Japanese, I love the Japanese. The Japanese are way advanced on us in robotics, and they're making life harder. They have a robot that can more gently than a human being pick up a person in a nursing home and take them to the bathroom and return them to their bed. Simpler, gentler than any human being can.
Wow.
They have a restaurant in Japan where handicapped people are at home and they operate machineries to serve food to people.
Oh, they don't have,
so they don't have the technofear, and they're advancing on it. They're just built a 60-foot Gundam statue, because why? Because they're nerds. And they're trying to get a Gundam to work. So they have a love, and their movies and their culture, we talk about our culture. Their culture, their apocalypse isn't that robots destroyed us, but teams of humans and robots destroyed us, and there's teams of humans and robots on the other side. So it's always a human choice to destroy the world. In American literature, we see the robot as the enemy, the replacer, the automation that's going to harm us. And our policies match that. I mean, I'm with Robert Anton Wilson about taxing the robots and giving everybody a universal basic income. That would solve a lot of our problems. Just tax the robots a third of what they would take, you know, to hire a worker to do the same job. And we would have that. But we have this robot fear.
Yeah.
But we don't see that in Japan. If you look at Japan, they don't have that. We have a magic fear, right? In Africa, they have a magic fear. In South America, not quite so much. And they have advanced cultures of it that practice different forms. And we have people from all over America who fly down to experience those magical properties of the highest and the richest people and spend a fortune to have these experiences.
Yeah.
So it's depending on your culture. But definitely, the United States is very much driven by its pop culture. We are very much programmed. We've accepted the programming of our pop culture. We all think we're celebrities. We all live in the Truman Show. And for whatever reason, we made robots the enemies. But in fact, we're seeing them more and more as allies. Who doesn't have a drone? Pretty soon, podcasters are going to have drones that walk with them, or videocasters that walk with them and do them 24/7. And there's already podcasters who are beginning to do that.
So when you say techno magic, it really is like a positive view of where we're headed with all this.
Absolutely. A magical sensors. We put out sensors everywhere. You know, we have sensors in our body that'll watch us. I mean, it depends on which way you want to look at it. Anything that brings the human imagination to the next level is important. And I'm different than this, and I believe in the technium, the seventh order of life, the idea that our technology, we build our tools and our tools build us. So the better we build these things, we don't have to have this AI thing out there. We could be having Jarvis's suit. So we're all having control in our little AIs who produce income enough for us to be able to live. It doesn't take very much for us to live. It doesn't. And I actually see our magical world. And I think it'll be great. I mean, in a lot of ways. Do I think we're going to have traffic? I think we're going to have vidits. Videodrome put out that term. I think we're going to have people who are the connected, who don't go anywhere but live in their house. And isn't in a climate change world, isn't that what we need until we get our population down or under control?
Wait a minute. But you're not saying kill off a lot of the people, are you?
No. For some people will transcend. They won't just move around as much. I'm saying that's the negative side. If you want to know the really dark side of my technomagic, I think people are going to get so lost in the internet. I do. I think it's as dangerous as anything. But I also think it's the most positive thing in the world. I think this discovery of this world is like flying. People used to, you know, die from crashing all the time. The early guys did it for the thrills. But then everybody flies now.
What happens if you run for president?
Me?
Yeah.
Never happened.
Do we need a witch in office? It sounds like we might.
We do. I can tell you. Yeah, I actually the truth is the witch I want is AOC.
Serious. Do you think she's a practitioner?
I think she's a new age light practitioner, to tell you the truth. Actually, Taylor Swift came out earlier this year.
I remember that.
She just came out So she just came out and she actually said she was a witch. Her latest album she dropped, the last album she dropped, Evermore, has got witch terms. And she's actually did it on, she posted to Facebook and to Twitter. Twitter is where she posted that she's a witch. So you're seeing the cultural move towards witch, which is a different thing. So you also have this idea of an empowerment movement that sits on top of this. And that can really confuse the difference between the hard magic we've been talking about and some of the more popular culture.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say there is a feminist kind of pop, and to a point where I felt, I mean, look, I talk about this example with my friends all the time. I went to the store Catland in Brooklyn, and you know, one of the things that they did, I remember when the Brent Kavanaugh case was happening, there was like a Facebook event that was like, we're all gonna hex Brent Kavanaugh, and I was like, that doesn't feel like positive energy. And then I went into this store and it was like they were playing heavy metal and there was just like an energy about it, Ed, that made me go like, I don't know what this witchcraft is, but like, I've been to new age stores that feel a little lighter than the energy in here. And not that I don't think that there are people, and especially men in this world, that probably should be hexed by witches for their behaviors. I'm not saying that. But the idea of being like that kind of dark, like almost, I don't know. The hatred, there was a lot of hatred I felt going on there. And I don't know if that's just like the pathway towards like a greater version of witchery. But I'm curious your thoughts.
So it was tracking. I mean, it was the idea of some of the more practitioners. There are actually a whole series, I won't go into it, but of people who led these types of rituals constantly. And it did bring people together. It kind of, you know, again, going back to the rock concert thing, it gave them all a unified effort to put out their rage, their anger. And it became hatred, just like the right has. There have been people who created very angry, very hateful statements, even inside the witch community, mostly of people who don't practice. The problem is that we went into the latest cycle of politics with maybe just right around with maybe 500 to 700,000. People, maybe a million, we were looking at as our numbers in 2014, 2015, of self-declared. Last and last thing, because of Trump, we went up to 4 million. So 3 million people have come into this in the last 4 years. So, and they're coming out of the Llewellyn books and the pop culture and the infinite Facebook things, and they're self-created. Just like every generation has had to. The problem with the modern movement is every generation had to self-create and then try to teach their information to the next generation.
Yeah.
And so you had the GI generation, the boomers generation, they changed it to the Xer generation. And what's happened is in each of those cases, none of them have been big enough. This has always outstripped the teachers, always. That's why Witch School was created, because it was constantly outstripping my ability to teach or get people to teach. You start a class in Chicago, you go from 2 people to 20 people to 40 people.
Yeah.
It's that contagious. And now we went into this movement and everybody was so angry and so mad and they were feeling so helpless. The witch is the mercenary of the last resort. If you can't get anything else to work, you go to the witch, because why not? And there's always been that element. You know, your boyfriend is cheating on you, you go to the witch and she gives you the powder. Yeah. So there's always been that mercenary aspect to the witch. And that's what that was. They were angry. They were mad. They were going to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally see that.
And then the press fed it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. This is all great. I'm trying to. So you've got witchschool.com. And you have pagan.world.com or pagan.world, which is like a resource, a directory, a networking. It's like a Facebook for practitioners. Is that correct?
Facebook would be too hard, because Facebook has spent a large time and money building up some of the features, but it is, it'll work with Facebook as well. It's a place where everybody can find a central directory. It existed in a form of a company called WitchFox for 20 years, as was how witches found each other, but they closed down last year. And for me, I wanted to say, well, what are we going to do? If you can do anything in the internet, what could you do? I says, well, Pagan World. And I've owned the name for years. And yeah, people don't realize that world is actually like .com. I also own pagan world.co. I own a bunch of others, But I always thought it was really neat that you can buy dot world. So you can buy, you know, your name dot world. It's kind of cool. And we decided there's going to be. And so, yeah, we're going to build a resource of the entire pagan world, which is, you know, from Witch School and from other resources. That's going to allow you to find your own coven, find a coven.
Yeah.
And find out information, or find a pagan group and find out information. And like Facebook or like other social tools, we will allow you to go ahead and pass through. It'll pass through to the individual. We're not going to try to become the primary source, but your connections, because witches and pagans and everywhere are so diverse that you can find the groups you want to deal with. So yes, it's going to be like a portal online to find the witches that you're looking for.
Wow. Hmm? Wow. And then Witch School, do you think that is like the best way for people to get into this, or do you have any other books that you recommend? Like, what's the gateway into this world?
Well, I always think Witch School is very good because you can get a very broad online education for nothing, 35 lessons. And we have a small tuition if you want to get more to become actually a person who can actually do clergy status, which is marry people, bury people, and do all that. That's great for it. I think another great space I think I enjoy a lot is, you know, books. Go on to the books, especially Scott Cunningham books I like. Witch School has books, so I like books. If you wanted to tell me, let me go ahead and put out a name out there. Look her up. Witch in the Village, Byron Ballard. If you really wanted to learn from somebody who's teaching online right now, teaches all the time and does rituals online, and really shows her daily teachings, that is really powerful, teaching Appalachian magic, if it's something that I'm fascinated by and I'm obsessing a little bit, is Byron Ballard. Byron space Ballard. I'm really vibing on that individual. I know him as a friend and person, but I've only known him for a short while. But I'm really vibing on the way that she's teaching magic, especially to young women.
What is she? Now, what's the extent of it? Like what draws you to her work?
First of all, it's the sincerity, and she's talking about the end of times, and she talks about positive ways of making a difference in your life on a daily basis. And she's leading them in a basic rituals that allows them to calm down and take the look at the world as it is, and how they can live in that world and try to do things to improve it. I mean, that's the very thing, but she actually shows Appalachian magic rituals. She does it from, it's some of the most understandable magic out there. It's from the magic that was born out of the 1700s and the 1600s out of the Appalachia, out of the Scottish and other people came to that area, and they still practice the same magic. That's amazing. But she's come very public. She's putting out a new books. So she's become and doing a lot of online teaching. It's just been amazing.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds great. I mean, I definitely, I'll check it out. We'll link to that in this episode. The other thing I was going to ask is, are there people in power, these elites, that actually like are meeting together and doing dark magic rituals?
Oh, I'm convinced of it. Absolutely. I don't think Trump did. I think Trump is a very different creature. I think Trump was created by the celebrity status business. I think he's the egregore of the other America that we forgot we were creating. He is the industrial television complex president. Reagan, absolutely. But there's a picture of him in Saudi Arabia around that glowing globe where they do so are the rituals. They do rituals publicly. A lot of the presidency is a public ritual that we forget from Trump, but they have to carry out their actions. Remember, there's a lot of masonry in the way our government works. They have a lot of rituals to reinforce things, how they call them to arms, how they call things. They call them rules and regulations, but they are rituals. There's a Bohemian Grove where they do meet. Absolutely, I do. I believe in that. I'm out on Jeffrey Epstein. I'm out on, does that really exist? Because especially over disqualified Pizzagate, I'm very skeptical of that. But yeah, we catch them all the time. I mean, dark people. I mean, we were constantly arresting politicians for stupid stuff. And you know, the family is a big one too. They're a Christian front out of the United States. And if you ever study the family, scariest group out there. And they're Christian dominions who do rituals with congressmen and other people to control the way they work and all of that. Work in the country, and that this isn't a, you know, a conspiracy theory. There are actually news broadcasts by major news things that talk about it.
What we got to free ourselves of this. Are they so? But are there good? So you think AOC is a good witch?
Well, I think AOC is a practitioner. Yes, I do. Good witch? No, I don't necessarily know she is. she's after all, but she did do something miraculous. She became one of the youngest congresswomen in the world, and she disposed a 10-time thing. And she was in a neighborhood who had a fair amount of Santeria practitioners. Now, I'm going to say it, just practitioners, local Latin magic users. So if nothing else, she gained the power of will to stand first against a Democrat, and then Republicans threw everything at her, and she won. A woman uh-huh. without resources. How did that happen? That reinforces the magical idea.
Wow, that might be the that's the soundbite of this episode. AOC, my gosh, she's yeah. That's I don't know if a lot of people are looking at her that way. I'm definitely am like, I mean, I love her and I'm drawn to her, and I definitely think there's something very magnetic about her presence and powerful about her presence. Maybe it's that.
Yeah, if you think about it, that is as powerful a glamour spell. They cannot take her eyes off of her. By definition, is that what a glamour spell is? They can't, and you know, she speaks eloquently. I'm not trying to degrade her intelligence and everything. She did well. We absolutely know Reagan, though, was a Mason. His wife was dealt with astrology. You know, there, if you really want to know another group of people did it, there it is. You know, we have and that sort of thing. So we peeked through. But AOC, no, absolutely. I really do think of her as a very powerful practitioner. She knows what she's doing, and she's used it young. Now, how far she goes, and she's a good person or a bad person, time changes. We'll see. But today, I think she's one of the most powerful people through attention, through glamour, through her will in the world. Not anything else, not by her position of her position, but by her very inner will. And that was what makes her a powerful, in my mind, witch, because she can conceive of what she wants.
Ed the Pagan, tell you what, before we wrap, if you were to do Magic Hunters, if we were to put on this show, Magic Hunters, going to show people out there that magic is a thing, that it's out there. What would, if you were to like, okay, we're going to do a 10 episode season, season one, and we need to build to the final episode to like really get people on board, like our season finale, what would we hunt in that episode? What would it be?
That's a good question. I can tell you things along the way. Hunting the fae should be easy because we can actually detect, you know, use detectors and things like that. Same thing we do on ghosts. I don't know. That would be a good question. I have to think about it. But absolutely, I think at the very least, somewhere in there, we'd have to actually have a magician do their spell, do their ritual that they're trying, and actually see if we can get any sort of detection of energy. That would be interesting.
Yeah, but I want to do it. I'm excited. I feel like it will be a very, like, we have a lot of fictionalized version. I mean, there was controversy when the new Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, came out because there was supposedly an actual occult ritual being performed on this Netflix show.
It was.
What was it?
I love that.
What was going on there? What was the controversy there?
Oh, they did. They used a real, when they did that section, they called Hecate. That is a real spell. That is a really well-known spell when she called on Hecate.
Yeah, but that offended Christians, right? Was that the idea?
Yeah, they were like, you're teaching our children real magic. And usually they say it's all made up, like Sabrina, you know, most of it's made up, or, you know, fairy tales. But no, this was a real hardcore piece. And it was used in that way. And they, some Christian groups, there's the White Horse Media, there's a couple of groups that are very anti-witch. They always try to yell it out.
Is Harry Potter occultic and ruining the minds of the masses?
Harry Potter did one thing, and every kid that was trapped in their room under the stairs thought that they could escape. And we have a whole generation now which never gave up the costumes. They never gave up their childhood. The Harry Potter generation is the cosplay generation. They never gave up their imagination. So yes, Harry Potter, along with really helped bring out the magic in the world, even if it's just cosplay. And people just love it. It changes people's lives.
Harry Potter. Wow. Yes. Sorry, keep going. What were you going to say? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. And if you see that, I mean, people bring in the avatars of those creatures, of those entities, and try to live their lives. And they wear the costumes, they wear the clothing, and they all try to live to those higher standards. Yes, it will affect you. Absolutely. And I hope so.
Ed the Pagan. I mean, this was like a very fascinating discussion. I'm definitely going to check out the witchschool.com. Check that out, ladies and gentlemen, as well as pagan.world. And we're definitely going to put your links. I mean, I feel like there's so many, this goes so deep. I mean, it's like the history of the earth almost and beyond. I almost wonder what didn't we cover that we could have gone to. I mean, I'm sure there's so many things. Is there anything on a talk show that you're ever like, this guy had me on the podcast and I wish he talked about necromancing? Like, what's the topic you wish we had covered?
Actually, I think you covered it beautifully of what I like to talk about. I talk about the now. I don't really, whatever's happening in my world now. So this was very much what's happening now. So I really appreciate all that.
Oh, good, good.
I don't think I missed too much. I mean, The one thing I think that I don't like to do is to, and you didn't do it, try to constantly defend myself against Satanism or what Christians say. I really appreciate that you allowed me to define, you asked me the questions that were necessary, but you allowed me to define what I was talking about. And I appreciate that. A lot of hosts don't do that. They try to fit into their worlds, and you did a really good job of letting me define what I was saying. And I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And you know what? Look, I mean, I'm going to have to do more research into it and see if I can have more of these experiences myself, because obviously there is a draw. Actually, wait a minute. You're a psychic. Do you think I'm a wizard or a witch? Do you think I have the potential?
Well, absolutely. I was going to say yes. But for you, I actually think you're much more, from this conversation, a magician. I look up chaos magic and that sort of energy of that, the effective, I would put you much more in that camp.
People say this. I often get the magician card pulled in tarot, like a few times.
Yeah. It's much more scientific and based. It's really more of a science. Alchemists are magicians. A lot of, how things work, especially chaos magic, is the idea, not the magic that you think you have to have, but the magic that works. If I were to give you any advice, I would say start looking at chaos magic first, and then I would see that you create through just disruption and stories that you basically want to disrupt the world and get them to think differently.
Wow. Well, thank you for getting me to think differently tonight, Ed the Pagan. Check him out, witchschool.com, and of course meet your coven at pagan.world. Thank you so much for coming on. This was awesome.
This was really cool. Thank you so much for having me.
Bless me. Bless me, Ed.
Blessed be.
Thank you.
Yes. Ed Hubbard. Ed the Pagan. Check out Witch School. Check out pagan.world. I'd like to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I'd like to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. And I'd like to thank you, AOC staffer, who happened to do Google search and maybe stumbled on this episode and is thinking, what were they talking about? Bring this to her. We want her on the show. Talk about her spells. I'm just waiting for the AOC has never been involved in any form of da-da-da-da-da disclaimer. If we can contribute to that, I'm glad I've done something. Thanks for listening.